This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. And a bit of an abbreviated version for you on this Wednesday evening. We hope you enjoyed our coverage of the Canada-Finland World Junior Hockey Championship quarterfinal. Stay tuned to the station. We have another quarterfinal coming up right after us in about an hour and 10 minutes time. We wrap up quarterfinal Wednesday with the Czechs and the Slovaks, but absolute heartbreak for Team Canada in Vancouver. A 1-0 lead for Canada deep into the third period, and then with mere seconds to go, like I said, absolute heartbreak. A fluke goal gets past Michael DiPietro, and then in overtime, the Finns are able to defeat Canada by a 2-1 margin. Canada had its chances. How about a penalty shot in overtime? They're not able to capitalize on that. And then late, right before the finish goal, Canada with a wide-open net to have the stick absolutely explode rather than being able to put it into the net. Just absolute heartbreak for Team Canada. They fall 2-1 to Team Finland, ending their chances in the World Junior Hockey Championships.
Yeah, Drew, and you go back to 2016 when Finland upset Canada, if you want to call it an upset. They ended up winning the gold medal, right? Patrick Laine was on that team, of course.
Right.
And that was the team that featured Jesse Puljujärvi and Sebastian Aho. But Finland beat Canada in the preliminary round. And you could say what you want about the preliminary round, but Canada knew that Finland was going to be one of those teams that they were going to have to go through at some point in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it wasn't going to be, you know, in the round-robin portion. It was going to be, you know, in the quarterfinals or the semifinals. Even if Finland didn't even make it to the quarterfinals last year.
Yeah.
I mean, last year was a huge disappointment for Finland, right? And, you know, Canada is trying to defend, and they've had trouble scoring goals. And, you know, that game on New Year's Eve, Shawnee, I mean, Canada only gets the one goal. And that was early in the game. Cody Glass got the only goal. And Mikey DiPietro was excellent in that game, even though they lost. But
he was excellent tonight as well, again, in a losing effort.
He has to be the MVP of Team Canada in this tournament. And they're not going to win a medal, and it's going to be the first time that they've ever not won a medal when
on
they hosted
ice.
The tournament,
yeah.
Right, Drew? And he has to be the MVP because he only allows, what did he allow, 4 goals in regulation in 4 games, I think?
Well, today he had 2, including the overtime one. I mean, against, you're right.
Right. So 5 goals total in 4 games, right? Because Ian Scott started that other game against Switzerland. So obviously a very disappointing result for Team Canada, but they played really well. You mentioned, Drew, I mean, you had an opportunity for Max Comtois to win it in overtime with the penalty shot, and then just so unfortunate for Islanders draft pick Noah Dobson there. I mean, he would have scored on that if he connected on it. And
his
obviously
stick just
his
exploded
breaks
in his hands.
And that's what happens when you get into overtime, right? So, you know, credit to Finland. They played really well right to the end, but really unfortunate, especially for Canucks draft pick Mikey DiPietro, who wasn't on Team Canada last year. Comtois, guys, was the only returning player from last year, but especially for DiPietro, just because he played so well and he almost had the shutout.
Yeah, you know, a real difficult loss for Team Canada there, Sean. I should introduce everybody. Mm. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. How about that? The novel concept. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor for the next, 68 or so minutes, bringing you coverage of the NHL, of the Winnipeg Jets, and the World Junior Hockey Championships. Admittedly, Sean, I don't get to see a lot of this tournament year after year. I tend to be down south in Kentucky with visiting my wife's family when this tournament happens and when the preliminary rounds of this tournament happen. But it seems like the story for Team Canada, you look at tonight, only be able to get one goal. You look at the game on New Year's Eve against Russia where you're only able to get one goal. It seems like the story is going to be Canada just not being able to get enough offense when they really needed it.
Yeah, it's literally the point I was going to make. Just one goal performances just aren't going to do it in a tournament where you got to score, and scoring reigns supreme in these tournaments. You can't score one goal and then defend a lead for the majority of the game. It goes to show you got to play right until the end. What do they score? 49 seconds left in the third to tie it up. A fluke goal that deflects off a forward covering for a defenseman's stick and gets past Mikey DiPietro, and the look in his eyes as he's staring at Evan Bouchard. He literally is flabbergasted that this puck got behind him. You just feel so bad. The crowd cheering DiPietro even when the tournament was over for Team Canada. And you can't play that defend style hockey. We've seen it time and time again. You got to keep your foot on the gas. You got to be the aggressor. And I think Canada's power play also let them down in this tournament. They weren't able to get things going with the man advantage. And as a result, weren't able to get the scoring. And here is where we are.
Sean, I agree with you when you say that at times in this game, especially in the third period, I thought that Canada was maybe sitting back a little bit too much. And, you know, we're giving a lot of credit to Mikey DiPietro here. And he has been one of the best goaltenders in the tournament. But also, guys, Yukko Pekka-Luukkonen, a second rounder.
Easy for you to say.
Of the Buffalo Sabres, Drew. You remember, 5 minutes left in that third period, Brett Leeson, undrafted. He will be drafted in 2019, though, because he's one of the top scorers in the Western Hockey League playing with Prince Albert. But he has a point-blank chance with just over 5 minutes left in that game. So, I mean, Canada kept looking for that insurance goal, Shawnee, in that third period. And, you know, when you're up one goal for the majority of the game, I mean, you give the other team an opportunity to come back. But like we said at the top of the show, Finland is always a threat in any tournament they're in. Doesn't matter if you're talking World Juniors, Olympics, World Hockey Championship. I mean, nobody should be surprised that Finland's going on to the semis here.
When you get to an elimination game, a one-game elimination game, anything can happen. I mean, we saw it with the first quarterfinal earlier today. Who had Switzerland defeating Sweden? And they did. And they did so relatively handily. And I mean, we've seen the Swiss, you know, we've seen it in the Olympics when they've been able to defeat Canada. They are very good at not giving up anything. And when they take an early lead, they're even better at, you know, just collapsing into that defensive shell. And they are, you know, if you had both Canada and Sweden going home in the quarterfinals of this World Junior Hockey Championship and having a semifinal matchup featuring Switzerland and Finland, well, I mean, I hope you put some shekels down on it, because you're doing pretty well for yourself in Vegas right now. It goes to show what happens. One game elimination, crazy things happen. I mean, Canada had the lead for, you know, 59 minutes. So they were, and then it takes one bad bounce. And then overtime, and they're out. And Sweden, we know that they were suffering through the stomach flu for a lot of the tournament, and they weren't at 100%. And today, Switzerland, they get an early lead, just bottled everything up. The Swedes could get nothing going against the Swiss. And as a result, that is your semifinal on Friday between the Swiss and the Finns. And still in action right now, the States is up 2-0 on the Czechs. And the final game, which will be at 9:30 tonight, you can hear it live on TSN 1290 immediately following this program. The Russians and the Slovaks will be the other quarterfinal.
Well, you know, you just mentioned the Russians versus the Slovaks, Drew. Because Canada lost to Russia on New Year's Eve, they had to play Finland, and they would have got the Slovaks, which is, I would say,
an easier
opponent, right?
Yes, but no doubt.
Going back to what you said about, you know, winner takes all in a semifinal or quarterfinal situation, anybody who watched Canada versus Switzerland, Shawnee, in the round-robin portion of the tournament, they only won by a goal. And Canada, sure, they didn't play their best hockey, but Luka Hollenstein is giving them excellent goaltending. He's undrafted, by the way, the Swiss goaltender, Hollenstein.
Making a name for himself.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised if an NHL team gives him a call after this tournament is over because, you know, 42 stops, 41 stops, whatever it was today against Sweden. But when you get that type of goaltending, and the Canadians got it tonight and almost won the game, almost directly based on Michael DiPietro's goaltending, I mean, you can go far in this tournament. Switzerland has won a medal in this tournament before. And it seems like every year people are surprised that a team like Switzerland gets through to the semifinals, guys. But Switzerland won a bronze back in 1998. If you remember, that was the year that Canada, I think, finished seventh. That was the year before the tournament was in Winnipeg, Drew.
Sure.
And then they won silver in Winnipeg in 99, losing to
Russia,
the Russians.
The famous gold medal game. I mean, everybody remembers that. That game was still historic. It's amazing to me that it's now been 20 years and there's no return in sight for the World Junior Hockey Championship coming back to Winnipeg, which I find to be awfully bizarre, especially given that it's been to Vancouver and Victoria before. I mean, we know the debacle that was Toronto and Montreal a couple of the times. They're going back to where Edmonton and Red Deer in a couple more years.
And Winnipeg and Regina did actually bid on this World Junior Tournament.
Right, and they didn't get it. And
so I wouldn't be surprised if you see a joint bid from Winnipeg and Regina again.
You would expect it would be sometime in probably the next decade. It's hard to believe this tournament can stay away for another significant period of time.
I don't know when it's going to be, Drew, but I strongly believe that Winnipeg will get a World Junior Championship. I mean, you're talking about a city the size of, 800,000 plus now.
Yeah.
I mean, the 99 World Junior you mentioned, that's 20 years ago, and it is hard to believe that. But, you know, with the hockey fan base that we have here, and then you couple that up with, you know, surrounding cities like Brandon, Regina, Saskatoon, I think it only is a matter of time before it comes back here.
It seems to be a no-brainer. In any event, a disappointing result for Team Canada, losing a heartbreaker to the Finns. The Finns on to the semifinals, where they will face the Swiss on Friday night. When we come back, we shift our focus away from the World Junior Hockey Championship. It's time for some Winnipeg Jets discussion. We'll bring that to you next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kopp toward the net, pushed it toward the goal. That stopped. Kopp at the side of the goal, pushed it out in front. They're banging away at it. They score! Draws one by Kopp back toward the line for Morrow. Let a wrist shot go, deflected in front. They score! Brendan Lemieux with his second of the night. And with under 6 remaining in this third period, Winnipeg leads it 4-3. How about that? Oh, baby!
Twas a very nice New Year's Eve for Brendan Lemieux, getting 2 goals, including the game winner.
Pepe Lemieux.
That's not bad. Took me a second there. That's not bad. Have you gotten more clever since I've been gone? Is that what happened?
No, that's what we used to call Claude Lemieux, Pepe Lemieux.
Who's we?
I don't know.
Devils fans?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you guys all got together to come up with nicknames for Claude Lemieux. I think I suspect
so
most
Brendan,
of the...
Brendan would be Pepe Jr.
Yeah, Pepe, yeah, which doesn't rhyme the same.
No.
Yeah, so we'll go with Pepe Lemieux in your example there. Anyways, it was a very good Monday night for him, a very nice New Year's Eve, good way to ring in 2019. As he scored 2 goals for the Winnipeg Jets, including the game winner, as the Jets were able to defeat a desperate Edmonton Oilers team by that 5-4 margin on Monday night. And, of course, we'll talk more about the Oilers a little later on in the show as we talk about some of the interesting moves that were made by general manager Peter Chiarelli earlier this week.
Drew, by the way, do you remember who the love interest of Pepe Le Pew was?
No.
Penelope Pussycat.
Did you just look that up or did you know that?
I looked it up.
Okay. I'm glad that this is the research you're doing on the fly. You know, that's just A+ of you, I must say.
I'm glad to have you back.
It's nice to have you back,
yeah,
too.
You were gone for almost 2 weeks.
I was gone for almost 2 weeks.
And Shawnee and I did the NHL This Week show before Christmas, just the two of us. It was a one-hour show. And then last Saturday, you were still gone.
Yeah, you guys did an admirable job filling in for me, is what I understand. So it is nice to be back, believe it or not.
It's the return of Pepe Le Drew.
Yeah. Excellent. Sean, yes. Because if there's anybody who you want to emulate, Sean, it's definitely
Ezzie. How did I not come up with that?
It's a Lear. You must be rusty.
It's all it is.
You're not sleeping
Let's
well,
go, Pepe.
Is what happened there. Anyways, a good victory for the Jets on New Year's Eve.
Huge.
I wouldn't go as far as say huge. But
I think it was, Drew. And
really?
I'll tell you
huge?
Why I think it was huge. Because you have an Edmonton Oilers team that has now lost, what, 6 in a row?
Yeah.
And this Oilers team... Since Ken Hitchcock took over, I think he has had an impact on this Oilers team. And I know later on in the show, in the final segment, you want to talk about the Oilers. But, you know, they've made some moves here. They've brought in Brandon Manning and they've brought in Alex Petrovic. I mean, the injuries on defense, boys, that they've suffered with Chris Russell and Oscar Klefbom. I mean, those are two of your top 4 defensemen
right
there. And they had to make some moves. Now, I don't know why.
So why is the Jets game, why is the Jets win huge? We'll talk about the Oilers in the last segment.
I think it's huge because the Oilers played well and they were desperate. I mean, the Jets, I thought, were very impressive in that game. And, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins gets the ball rolling there on New Year's Eve. And, you know, they come back from that excellent, performance against the Minnesota Wild. I'm being sarcastic. I mean,
yeah, the Jets, tongue-in-cheek, you're saying the Jets were pretty awful against the Wild, which they were.
Right, and those 2 games at home, I mean, you know, the Jets were in danger of losing 3 games in a row, and that's something that you're just not used to over the last couple of years with these Jets. So when I say it's a huge win, I think you also have to throw in the Oilers' win in overtime in Winnipeg. I mean, this is a team, guys, and you go back to even like the Heritage Classic that the Oilers shut out the Jets. I mean, the Oilers, even though they missed the playoffs last year, they're in danger of missing the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. They've kind of been a bit of a pest to the Jets. And when you're talking about, you know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, I mean, Draisaitl had the 2 goals, obviously, but for the most part, guys, they shut down Connor McDavid. And that in and of itself, I think, is an accomplishment. But I just think when you consider the circumstances, the Jets had played pretty poorly in the previous 2 games, and the Oilers were a really desperate team. It was on the road. You could have used all the excuses in the world for why the Jets were going to lose that game.
No Dustin Byfuglien.
Exactly. And, you know, I actually thought that, you know, Joe Morrow looked pretty good there. And, Josh Morrissey played 26 and a half minutes. He was excellent. And with Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup, you're going to see Morrissey and Trouba playing more. You're going to see Tyler Myers playing more. But that's what I meant by huge. I just thought it was a really impressive win for the Jets. Doesn't really change much as far as the standings go.
Right.
I mean, the Jets are first place in the West. They're going to be first place in the Central or second place in the Central by the time the season is finished.
Yeah.
But I just think it was really impressive coming off of that stinker in Winnipeg against the Wild.
The Jets, of course, 2 points up on the Nashville Predators for top spot in the Central Division and with two games in hand over the Predators still to be played for the Jets. So they're in the driver's seat, as we know, in the Central Division. So I get your point about it being, it's a good way for them to end 2018, and it's a good way for them for a losing skid. Not that it really is in danger of spiraling out of control, but it's nice that, when you never lose more than, say, two games in a row, or you always at least earn one point in, of every two or three games, you're doing fine. It's never going to become straight chaos.
Yeah, and whether the game is huge or not to be determined, but I do agree that there is value in the fact that the Jets pride themselves on not losing three in a row since, 2016, when we saw a variety of three-game losing streaks. But, I mean, you got to look at just who the goal scorers are in this game and how indicative it is of each team. I mean, Connor McDavid doesn't score, but Leon Draisaitl scores, right? But it's him and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and that's it. And then you look at the Jets, who gets the scoring for the Jets, and it's Brandon Tanev. It's Brandon Lemieux getting two goals. Yeah. It's the depth scoring.
Wheeler getting one.
One, but that's, you'll trade your stars for star. You trade your stars for stars, and it goes to show you that just when the stars aren't really going for the Jets, they have that depth scoring, and Edmonton just doesn't have that. And then there's this craziness coming out of Edmonton now, where Ken Hitchcock is pulling McDavid, Ryan Nugent, Hopkins, and Draisaitl off the ice and letting the rest of the team continue practice.
And, Sean, I think you make an excellent point when you mentioned Lemieux and Tanev. The goal scoring comes from the third and fourth lines because it was a bit of a surprise that Lemieux was in this game.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Mason Appleton comes out of the game. I think Appleton has played really well since he was called up, and Lemieux hadn't played since the game against Vancouver, and Lemieux goes into the lineup, and you're expecting, okay, he's going to play 6 minutes, 7 minutes.
He played 7 minutes.
He did play, but he scored two goals. Yeah. And sure, the first goal was a bit of a garbage goal.
Well, that's how Brandon Lemieux is going to score the majority of his goals.
He's going to score goals in front of the net, but the second goal, what a tip.
Well, I'm saying, you look at the way he scored, right? The first one, he's in the middle of four Edmonton Oilers jamming away. It's the first time I've ever seen a guy come out of a goal celebration without his stick. The ref is handing him his stick. And then the second one, like you just talked about, Ezzy, a world-class tip that Brendan Lemieux prides himself on, that he works on in practice all the time. He's apparently very good at it, in which we saw that. And first of all, guys, can we just give a shout-out to the kid in the audience staring down, Adam Lowry?
That was pretty funny. That kid was. I'm sure he's already a meme on the internet.
GIFs of the year for sure.
GIF or GIF?
It's GIF, isn't it?
I don't know. We've had this conversation before. I don't think we ever came up with a final
answer.
I've
never heard anyone say GIF.
Really?
I say GIF.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe it is GIF.
I don't know. This is like the Twizzler versus Nib argument we were having before the show began. In any event, it was a very good effort for Brendan Lemieux in particular, but let's talk about the impact of Dustin Byfuglien now being out of the Jets lineup for the foreseeable future. We know that there won't be an update on his health until at least after the All-Star break, so the Jets are going to be without Dustin Byfuglien for at least the next month or so, give or take. Sami Niku was called up from the Manitoba Moose. When does Niku get into the lineup, and how does this affect the Jets' defense going forward?
Yeah, I think it's not a cop-out answer, but it's only a matter of time before Sami Niku gets into the lineup. I don't know necessarily that it's going to be Friday against the Penguins, but, I talked about it a little bit earlier, Drew. When you're talking about, Dustin Byfuglien not being in the lineup, Tyler Myers goes up to the second pair, right? And then you've got Kulikov and Myers, who have played together many times before over the last few seasons.
Sure.
And then Ben Chiarot and Joe Morrow as your third pair, Morrow playing on his offside. Now, if Sami Niku comes into the lineup, what do you do then? Do you put him on his natural left side, or does he play on the right side? He has the ability to play both, and the question is, who are you taking out? Now, the obvious answer is Joe Morrow.
I think his leash is the shortest.
I can't see with the way Ben Chiarot has played this year, this might be his best year as a professional hockey player. So, for me, it would be Sami Niku going in on that third pair on the right side. So when you're talking about how does the Byfuglien injury impact the Jets, it really is all about ice time and how you distribute the ice time and players now being elevated. And Myers, to me, is the key. And Myers is a guy that I think was criticized a lot the first 10 to 15 games of the year.
Yeah.
And I think the last 10 to 15 games, he's been much better. He's jumping up into the play. Mm-hmm. He's playing better defensively, playing more confidently. So I don't think, because Byfuglien's going to miss the next month, that the Jets are going to go into tailspin. I don't think you think that. I don't think most people think that. But we're really going to see how the Jets' D depth is tested, right?
And not the first time we've seen the Jets' D depth have to be tested. Well, yeah. If you remember back to the first time the Jets made the playoffs, when they had to go out and they acquired, what'd they have? Oh, they had so many injuries. They had to go out.
Are we
going to
talk about my boy Jay Harrison right now?
Jay Harrison,
boy Keaton Ellerbe.
Yeah, they had to go out and get Jay Harrison.
Don't forget about Party Dangle,
Adam Party. I mean, those, you know, they were down to 10, 11 defensemen at that point. But the organization didn't have the depth that the organization now has on the back end.
Well, and you don't even have Tucker Pullman right now healthy.
That's what I was
going
to say.
So if Tucker Pullman was healthy, Shawnee, I think he'd be the first guy called up.
Agreed.
I think what the Jets is somewhat fortuitous in terms of the timing is that it's not an especially busy time of the year. If this was February, it'd be a lot busier. You have the player break for the week towards the end of this month in about 3 weeks' time, starting on January 20th. And then the Jets don't play for 8 full days from the 20th all the way through. They come back on January 28th. So without Byfuglien in the lineup and being off the ice, the team for, you know, that 7-8 day period is... You never want to lose Byfuglien, but the timing isn't terrible right now.
Well, and you also, Shawnee, you don't have any other injured players. I mean, aside from Buff, the Jets are healthy.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. They're healthy, and like you were talking about the fortuitous timing of the injury, December was a very compressed schedule for the Jets. So if this comes maybe beginning of December, you're not sure maybe how, you know, that compressed schedule, how it'll affect with the increased minutes. But yeah, like you were talking about, Drew, they've got a little bit of time to let this heal, let him get past that first initial stage of the injury. And, I mean, a worst-case scenario, we call up Cam Schilling.
Well, he was up before. You know, we played a couple games.
Yeah.
He was
serviceable.
You know, serviceable.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously don't want it in the playoffs. You don't want it as a long-term solution.
I think you're really going to start to see where the Jets are tested when, not this weekend, but the following weekend, when they play Minnesota-Detroit back-to-back. One game is on the road. That's in Minnesota. And then they come back, and on Friday the 11th, they play Detroit. The Jets actually have a stretch of 6 games in 10 days, Shawnee. And you only have the one back-to-back, but you've got Anaheim in there, Vegas, Nashville, and Dallas. So when you're talking about those 4 teams, those are all teams that are either in a playoff spot or that are close to a playoff spot. When you're talking about Anaheim and Dallas, they're kind of competing for that last wild card spot. But obviously Vegas and Nashville, I mean, those are going to be top teams in their respective divisions. So I don't think they're going to be tested in the next week, but I think when you get to next week, late next week, when they've got that 6 game in 10-day stretch,
mm-hmm.
that's when the depth is going to be tested.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The Jets, of course, in action there, you know, have a little bit of a break after the New Year's Eve game in Edmonton. Not in action again until Friday when they meet the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have the All-Star. They have their skills competition happening right now at Bell MTS Place. You can follow our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve and our Instagram feed, Instagram.com/Illegal Curve, if you want the latest from the Winnipeg Jets skills competition. We're going with a bit of a commercial-free situation here on the program on this Wednesday evening. So let's bring in our next guest. He's the national hockey writer from thescore.com. John Mattis joins us on the line right now. John, good evening. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you, too, John. Nice to hear from you, and all the best, of course, in the upcoming in 2019. Brought you on to take a look around the NHL. You know, John, it's been a bit of a chaotic week, particularly in Dallas, Texas. I mean, in your times covering this league, John, have you ever seen the vitriol come from a team president be directed at two of the team's superstars, like happened earlier this week with Jim Leitz on Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin?
No, I've definitely not seen it. Mind you, I haven't been covering the league for 40 years, but from what I gather, it's pretty unprecedented across not only the NHL, but, you know, North American pro sports. Who knows if something's happened in the past that we're all forgetting about, but the language used, I would say, was the alarming part, not necessarily that a president or a CEO is calling out its players, although that alone is newsworthy, but the fact that he used profanity and the fact that, you know, it was all on the record and not taken out of context and, you know, very deliberate and trying to send a message, but in a very harsh way. I think that was alarming. It was shocking. It was crazy. And it of all places, coming from Dallas, which is usually a pretty low key market in terms of, you know, drama, or in terms of, you know, they're not necessarily ever a bad team. Right now, they're not a bad team. They're in a playoff spot right now. So it's like, I understand where they're coming from, and maybe we can get into that later. But the way that the team went about it, sending the message, was off base for sure.
You know, all people involved in this are sort of saying the right thing after the comments were made, particularly Sagan and Ben, who are, you know, taking the high road, saying they play for their teammates, they play for their coach. You know, who is this Jim Lights guy? We don't really know him, adopting that kind of attitude. Is this going to end up in a divorce, or can they eventually put this behind them? Or do you think just these comments and them becoming public will ultimately end up with one of these two players leaving the Stars organization?
Well, I would say, not to sit on the fence, but I would say a lot of it would have to do with what happens in the second half of the season. I think at this point, the team isn't exploring trading either player. I think that it would also be foolish for them to do that, given, you know, the money that they owe these guys. Sagan, $9.85 per year through 2026-27. That's a lot of years left on that contract, which I guess doesn't even kick in until next year. And then Jamie Benn, $9.5 through 2024-25. So that alone puts them in an awkward spot to trade these guys. And also, when you trade players of this caliber, are you ever really getting value back in return, or the correct value? And when you go out and, you know, blast them in the media, you drop the value just right there, right? So if they're getting calls from teams, I would imagine the exchange the other way isn't great. So I would say that if this season goes real sideways, if it goes off the rails, I can see a situation where maybe Ben gets moved. I don't know about Sagan. I think that, you know, he's young enough, and his performance this year has been good enough to warrant some slack. And I think, you know, when you look at the underlying numbers, he looks pretty good. When you look at the fact that he's hit, I believe, a league-high amount of posts and crossbars, you go, okay, you know, is this all really going to just even out in the end at the end of the season? And now you're seeing, you know, even tonight, Ben and Sagan both scoring. So I had no problem with the fact that they were, you know, maybe sending a message through the media. Like, that's not breaking news. It happens fairly often, maybe once or twice a season in every market, just not to this extent and not with this type of language. So it was a delivery that I had a problem with. I don't really have a problem with calling out your best players if they're not being your best players. Although, you know, when you kind of look at the player side of things, and you look at the production on this Dallas Stars team and the way that it's constructed, you know, is Jim Nill the guy to blame? Is, you know, Jamie Benn and Tyler Sagan are two of the best, you know, if you look at this year, they're probably, they're definitely in the top five on that team in terms of players that have played this season and are producing at a high level. Like, they're still going out there and putting up some kind of production. So it's a bit of an odd situation on really a number of levels.
John, today Alex Ovechkin announced that he's not going to be playing in the 2019 All-Star Game in San Jose, which means he's going to be suspended for one game. It's either going to be against Toronto or Calgary in February. Do you have a problem at all with Ovechkin not playing in the game? He's done it before. And do you think it's time for the NHL to get rid of that rule that says that if an NHL player is announced to be an All-Star participant, that they're going to be suspended? Because as far as I'm concerned, NHL players shouldn't have to miss a game just because they choose not to participate in an All-Star game.
I think I'm totally fine with him doing what he's doing. So, you know, I've seen people go on Twitter today and say, oh, you know, I'm probably paraphrasing, but saying, you know, Ovechkin, what a spoiled brat. Oh, I can't believe he's doing this, you know, to the All-Star game and ruining the weekend. Like, I completely disagree with that. I say, you know, do what you got to do, especially when the Capitals are on their bye week, connecting to All-Star weekend. So it makes that time off even better. This is a guy who's played, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would imagine over 1,000 games, and he's extremely durable. And maybe this season he's thinking, you know, I need that extra time because I want to win the Stanley Cup again. I'm coming off an extremely long season where the Capitals finally won the Cup. So I have no problem with that. He's done so much for the game. He's been at the All-Star game and been a focal point in the past. He's 33 now. There's so many great young players. Like, I really have no issue with that. I do believe that the NHL should probably have some kind of penalty for missing the All-Star game. One game suspension maybe is a little harsh. Maybe it's a fine instead in the future. And the only reason I say that is because you don't want guys just falling off the map completely. You know, guys left, right, and center deciding to not participate in the All-Star game just because you don't want to set a precedent. And then all of a sudden every year you're picking up the pieces after the, you know, you want to name this guy and he says no. You want to name this guy, he says no. If there's one or two exceptions per year, I think that's fine. I think it you know, keeps everyone happy. Well, most people happy. So I think having some kind of punishment, we'll call it, I think is okay. The one game suspension is kind of a little harsh, but I don't really know what a fine does when these guys make millions of dollars. So I think I'm okay with the punishment, and I'm okay with them sitting out.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is John Mattis, the national hockey writer for thescore.com. We're talking about the NHL, looking around the league with John.
John, big news in Winnipeg recently that the Jets and the Flames are going to play another outdoor game in 2019 in Regina at Mosaic Stadium. And, you know, as saturated as the NHL is with these outdoor games as of late, I think they really hit it on the nail on the head here, putting it in a hockey market that doesn't, you know, that doesn't have an NHL team.
No, I thought that was great. I also think I don't know if it was planned on the Stars brass to come out with their comments before the Winter Classic announcement. But as a side note, that's kind of a weird timing situation because obviously they knew that was coming down the pipe. But anyways, Regina, I think, was tremendous. I think if you seek places like that for outdoor games, especially when there's a capable stadium like they have in Regina, I think that's a no-brainer. And, you know, people like to complain about there being too many outdoor games, which I do. I understand that, but at the same time, I don't know about you guys, but I went to the outdoor game for the World Juniors last year in Buffalo, and it's just a fantastic, you know, experience when you're actually there. Like, that's what Gary Bettman tries to get across to people when he's talking about all these outdoor games. Is like, if you experience it as a fan, it's like it's just completely different than anything you would ever go through if you're just going to, I don't know, the MTS Center or the Scotiabank Arena. Like, it's a kind of a once in a lifetime, obviously not, because you can go to multiple, but it's a very unique experience. So I'm behind the NHL in that sense, and we saw it with the Winter Classic at Notre Dame, just great weather, great aesthetics. So I think that you know, the whole outdoor thing's kind of grown on me. At one point, I was fatigued with it, and I was like, okay, you know, five per year is a little excessive. They've toned it down a bit. I believe it's at three or four. So that's a nice happy medium between going nuts and only having the Winter Classic. So, yeah, good on them for going to Regina, because I'm sure they're pretty pumped there, and that'll be an easy sellout.
John Mattis, national hockey writer for thescore.com, is our guest on NHL This Week. John, I have a hypothetical for you. I'd like to walk you through it. Let's say, I don't know, 2 years ago, there was a fellow sports writer who came into your office and broke your arm. And then he said that he did it on purpose, and he took some sort of bizarre pleasure in breaking your arm. And then 2 years later, that same sports writer is acquired by your company, and now you have to work alongside that sports writer. And you happen to also be the world's greatest sports writer and can basically punch your own ticket to do anything you wanted to do in the world of sports writing. Would you really want to work next to that guy?
Well, first of all, this analogy, or metaphor, flew right over my head at first. I had no idea what you're talking about, but I understand now that it's Connor McDavid, it's Brandon Manning, and
the
whole situation going on in Edmonton. I don't know. Like, the thing with this is, if Connor McDavid said privately to Peter Chiarelli, this is okay, it's water under the bridge, then I have absolutely no problem with this trade. But if the Oilers GM decided to just go pick up Manning, you know, on a whim or without consulting the best player in the world, the best player on his team, the player that's really being not misused, but is being not wasted away, that's too strong. But I think you get the point that the Oilers just aren't taking advantage of a guy of his caliber. If you don't consult that guy, who's probably already unhappy, let's face it, even though he's going to put on a face, like, he doesn't want to lose year after year after year. If you're not consulting him over something that could be controversial or could be awkward, I think that's poor managing, especially when the player coming in return is not going to, you know, he's not an impact player. Let's face it, he's a third pairing defenseman. So I thought it was a ballsy move, I'll say, on the part of Peter Chiarelli. But if he had consulted with Connor McDavid and believes in the heart of his heart that Manning can help his hockey team, then okay, that's fine. But yeah, optically, a little out of left field.
John, you're based in Toronto, so we have to ask you about the Leafs. And it was reported today that goaltender Freddie Anderson won't be available for the afternoon game tomorrow against the Minnesota Wild, so he might be available for the next game against the Canucks on the weekend. But are Leafs fans going to be more upset that Freddie Anderson isn't available tomorrow, or are they going to be more upset that Mitch Marner was just snubbed for the All-Star game?
Probably the Mitch Marner snub, because he actually can't even be voted into the All-Star game. He's not included on that last men in list. So, yeah, I think that they'll take more exception to that, even though, Anderson being out is obviously a bigger deal in the grand scheme of things. But the word from the Leafs is that they're being kind of vague and cryptic about it, but it seems like Anderson's on his way back. Today he was one-on-one with the goalie coach, so he's not back with the team, which hints that maybe Vancouver Saturday might be a bit of a stretch. It might be Nashville Monday when he gets back into action. But the silver lining, if there ever is any silver lining behind your starting goalie going down, is that Garrett Sparks, a guy who killed it in the AHL last year and has done pretty well in the NHL this year, has been given the reins and has a nice opportunity here in the middle of the season with the team firmly in second place in the Atlantic Division, pretty far out from Tampa, like kind of in the sweet spot to, I don't know if experiment's the right word, but to see, new line combinations, try this, try that. The fact that Garrett Sparks has an opportunity to play a number of games in a row, I think bodes well for the Leafs and Kyle Dubas and trying to figure out what exactly they have with Garrett Sparks, because eventually, Frederick Anderson's contract's going to come up and they're going to have to think about, is Sparks our backup? Is he starter quality? All those questions. So the silver lining isn't so bad. That's a kind of a nice, positive to take away from the situation. And also, I think that Anderson will be back in pretty short order. So the sky isn't falling in Toronto, but maybe it is for Mitch Marner fans.
John, just one last question for you here. Is there a chance that we're going to see Michael Hutchinson, the newest Leaf, called up for tomorrow? Because I believe the Leafs haven't called up a goalie yet.
Yeah, no, there's a definite chance. I don't know if it's for sure, but he's one of a couple. So I guess that's also another silver lining that even he might not get any playing time. He's at least going to be with the big club for one game, maybe two.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, we always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us, and please keep that writing arm of yours safe and sound.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Take care, John. When we come back, we're going to talk about some controversy with Alan Walsh, Michael Frolik, and the Calgary Flames. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
In regards to that tweet, did you know that your agent was going to put that tweet out there?
Yeah, you know what, guys? I think I don't want to comment any of those things. I think if you have any question about that, I think you can reach to my agent, and he will probably tell you more. But, I'm sorry, but I don't think you on this thing, I don't think you can get anything from me.
That was Calgary Flames forward Michael Frolik refusing to comment when his agent blasted the Flames organization and head coach Bill Peters. His agent is the often quotable Alan Walsh. Here is the tweet. This is from December 30th. Many people in Calgary have been reaching out asking why Michael Frolik is a healthy scratch. Keeping one of the team's most efficient and versatile forwards in the stands marginalizes and devalues a great team player. Is this the head coach's attempt to run a good player out of town? That was Alan Walsh, Michael Frolik's agent. A couple things on this. And I'll get your guys' opinion. One,
I'm blocked on Twitter by Alan Walsh, by the way.
Are you actually?
For like way back in the day, I was making fun of him.
What did you say?
I don't know. I probably said something about how he can't keep his mouth shut, which is true.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I mean, I'm not saying anything that isn't true.
You're not saying anything that isn't true. I didn't know you were blocked by Alan Walsh on Twitter, but that's very funny. Obviously, Alan Walsh sends out this tweet with Michael Frolik's knowledge. I mean, there's no question about that. Michael Frolik knows that Alan Walsh is going to send out that tweet.
Yep.
for Michael Frolik to then not comment about the tweet, it's like, give me a break, buddy. You know your agent's going to blast the team. You know your agent's going to accuse the coach of trying to run you out of town. And then you can't even stand there and give some generic answer about how, you know, I was upset or...
I just want to play.
Yeah, I just want to play the game. Oh, you know, you ask my agent. Give me a break, buddy. Give me a break.
And what I find...
This whole thing is very bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's bizarre, Drew. And what I find really interesting is he was scratched following that big win over the Jets.
He was scratched. Right? It wasn't
the
like
Jets.
He was
the Jets lost. Yeah. Calgary beat the Jets 4-1.
Yeah,
Frolik was scratched in the game against Vancouver, which they lost.
Right,
and then he comes back in the New Year's Eve game against San Jose, gets two assists.
Yeah, and he scored again tonight. He scored for the Red Wings tonight, right. For the Flames tonight.
Right. So obviously, you know, he's responded. Yeah. Like he's not. He's a veteran. Frolik is a veteran guy, and you don't expect him to be healthy scratched. Now, he has 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah,
and Frolik is back at his usual spot on the second line, but he was demoted. It was either the third line or the fourth line, but the point is...
It wasn't like he was scratched for 5 or 6 games as a healthy scratch.
I actually didn't think he was that bad against the Jets.
He was scratched for 1 game. He had been out of the lineup for about a dozen games, having... I think he had a high ankle sprain or something like that. So he was out of the lineup with an injury for about a dozen games, came back, played 2 games, then was healthy scratched for a game, and... Just by that one healthy scratch is what led to this entire debacle. I mean, Bill Peters claims that Frolik was going to be back in the lineup anyways before, you know, Alan Walsh came out with the tweet.
Well,
you'll hear from Bill Peters in a second.
And you're not going to scratch Frolik for a couple of games, right? Like, it's when you're talking about Frolik, how old is he, 30, 29? I mean, you're not a guy that's got that much NHL experience. I mean, you're not going to healthy scratch him for more than a game. I mean, that's clearly a wake-up call as far as I'm concerned.
The whole thing is just like it's a mountain. Like it's but Walsh and Frolik are making what seems to me to be a mountain out of a molehill.
Sure, but Walsh, how many times has Walsh done this, Drew? I mean, this.
But
is
he does it with the. He does it. This is obviously a player who is unhappy with his role on the team and has been all season. Because if this is just the first incident, this isn't a thing. You have to know that Walsh has been talking to Brad Treliving behind the scenes all season long about the usage of Michael Frolik.
Yep.
And there's no doubt that this is, you know, Walsh in his tweet asked about, is this the coach trying to run a player out of town? To me, this is a player saying, I want to be out of here.
Yes.
Like, that's what this is. This is Frolik saying via his agent, I don't like how I'm being used. I'm being passed on the depth chart by some really good players that the Flames acquired. Mm-hmm. Elias Lindholm was having a great year after they brought him over from Carolina. This is Frolik saying, I don't want to be here anymore because my role has changed and I'm not prepared to go in that manner. In fact, here's some more audio from Michael Frolik and from earlier this week after this whole thing blew up.
So far.
I know my role is going to probably change when I come here for this year. You know, I know we got a few new bodies here and I know the role is going to probably change a little bit, but I didn't expect that it's going to change that much, you know, and obviously, it's been, you know, frustrating, and obviously with the injury too. You know, I think those things happens, but you know, it sucks when you work hard in the summer and then you got off for a month and you can't do much. You know, and it takes time, I think, to kind of get back. It takes a few games, you know, to get the flow and get the you know games used to again. And hopefully, I get a chance to do it tonight.
That was Michael Frolik basically saying that he isn't happy with his role on the team.
I really like Michael Frolik as a player.
Yeah.
And, you know, Shawnee likes to talk about the, you know, the Swiss Army knife type of player. When he was a Winnipeg Jet, that's what he did.
Yeah.
Right? He's a guy that can play on any line.
Very effective for the Jets.
Right? Mm-hmm. Can play power play.
People were upset when they didn't re-sign him.
Well, he's a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, but for me, Drew, this is a stupid decision on their part because Calgary is first in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Calgary is a really good hockey team right now. And I realize that maybe Frolik wants more minutes, more power play minutes, and all of that. But you have Sean Monahan ahead of you. You have Johnny Gaudreau, arguably a Hart Trophy candidate. You mentioned Elias Lindholm. Elias Lindholm, I think, is up to, what, 47 points?
Something like
and
that.
I think he had 47 points all of last year, if I'm not mistaken. So Elias Lindholm, he's been passed by him. You're talking to Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett. I mean, he's still playing on the second line.
This is a player in Frolik putting himself above the team. Because the Flames are, I mean, there's no reason why they're not a Western Conference contender right now.
Yeah,
they're one of the top 4 teams in the league, in the Western Conference.
It's as if you should just want to say, bite your tongue, accept your role, and go on a playoff run with a really good team and try to win yourself a cup.
The whole thing, the whole timing of it is bizarre. I mean, you know, for as good as the Flames have been this year, there's stuff smoldering there. You know, James Neal.
I was going to say maybe he's upset that James Neal's being used more than him, even though the struggles with Neal. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking of ideas of why Michael Frolik and Alan Walsh would publicly say these things. It's just odd.
And, Shawnee, you wonder if Brad Tree Living is going to make a move here. Well, maybe not necessarily, you know, in the next week, but leading up to the trade deadline, because he knows Calgary is, at the very least, making the playoffs. They're going to be, you know, one of the top two or three teams in the Pacific Division, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Vegas is going to push. San Jose is going to push. I mean, it's a dogfight. It's not like Calgary has first in the Pacific locked up, right? But you almost wonder if they try to move Frolik and they try to get someone else because, you know, with $4.3 million left this year and next year, you might want to dump that salary and get more of a, you know, a utility player that makes less money. And when you're talking about James Neal, I don't think he's going to be moved because he's in the first year of a five-year deal.
He's also got 8 points in 40 games.
Well, Neal has not been good this
year. He's making $5.75 million for the next 5 years.
Yeah, but that tells you about how good this Flames team is.
That's right.
They've already beat the Jets twice this year.
James Neal is absolutely playing the worst hockey of his entire NHL
and
career.
And they're still in first.
And the Flames are still in first.
Right, that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So you wonder maybe even if they try to acquire a goaltender. I mean, David Riddick has turned into their number one goaltender.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike Smith, you know, we know that, you know, his career is in the back nine. He's not a guy that is going to be re-signed to a long deal. So you wonder, you know, if a guy like Frolik or maybe even James Neal would be moved. But like I said, I don't see Neal being moved, like you said, not only the cap hit, but because he's in the first year of the contract. But Frolik wouldn't be shocked if he's moved within the next couple of months.
Me neither. Last word on this goes to Calgary Flames head coach Bill Peters when he was asked to his comments about Alan Walsh's tweet.
What was your response when you read it?
Well, I didn't read it.
When you heard about it, what was your response?
No response. So Fro's in the lineup, and he's going to play. He's going to play with Bax and Chucky. Well, he's missed a lot of hockey. He missed 15 games there. Came back for two, missed another one, and now he's playing here today, so we'll see. So when you miss that much time with that type of injury, it takes time. It's no different when guys come off upper body injuries that are related above your shoulders. You don't get the same guy back right away. It's just not reality, so that's the case, and we'll see how they play tonight.
That's Calgary Flames head coach Bill Peters certainly taking the high road when it comes to Alan Walsh and Michael Frolik in this brouhaha.
You know what, Drew? Good for Bill Peters. He's a veteran coach. He coached with the Carolina Hurricanes, but he was a longtime assistant coach in Detroit.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. I mean, he benched Michael Frolik because he didn't think he was playing well. And
his team's in first place in the Pacific.
And he's standing by his decision.
When we come back, we address the other team in Alberta, the Edmonton Oilers, with some interesting moves this week. We discuss them next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I spoke with Connor last year. We were speaking with Philadelphia on acquiring Brandon Manning, and I pulled Connor aside and I asked him if he had a problem with this, and he said no. He said, in fact, he thinks the player would help us. So I wanted to make sure last year. I did not speak with Connor this year. I told him in advance that we had made the transaction.
Edmonton Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli addressing the media after the Oilers made a number of moves over the weekend to bolster, well, I don't know if they improved it, they bolstered their defense, their blue line. Improved is I guess a subject matter for we can talk about whether or not they've actually done
changed.
Anything to, yeah, you know, somebody likened it to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, which I thought was a fairly apt analogy. Brandon Manning is the one who got all the headlines. He comes over from the Chicago Blackhawks. Manning, of course, was a member of the Philadelphia Flyers when he injured Connor McDavid back in his rookie season. And initially he said he did it by accident. And then later on he said, he actually did it purposefully. I mean, if you're Peter Chiarelli,
what is Peter Chiarelli doing?
You have to improve your blue line.
Like, he has to be fired at the end of this year.
He
right?
has to be fired as soon as he considers trading for Brandon Manning, who Connor McDavid clearly doesn't like. no matter what McDavid will say as a good soldier. It's Brandon Manning. It's not like he's a good defenseman.
Well, Brandon Manning is a depth defenseman in the NHL. He's not he's certainly not a top four defenseman on a good team or even a mediocre team. And that's, you know, all due respect to Brandon Manning. Just throughout his NHL career, he just hasn't proven that he would be a top four defenseman. He certainly wouldn't be a top six defenseman on the Jets.
From Travis Yost, looks at the game from a statistical point of view on TSN.ca. From Travis Yost, Brandon Manning has been outscored 26-9, minus 2.8 goals per 60 minutes this season in Chicago, which is the worst number for any defender in the league and the second worst for any positional player. I mean, it's not like you're acquiring a guy who's really helping your team. You're just acquiring a guy who's pissing off the world's best player who's on your team.
This is my problem, though, with it, Drew. I understand what Peter Chiarelli is doing here.
He needs to improve his defense.
Well, because of the injuries. Yes. Oscar Klefbom and Chris Russell are both left-shot defensemen.
Get it.
Brandon Manning is a left-shot defenseman,
mm-hmm.
So I get that. But what I don't get is that on a team that has trouble scoring goals, mm-hmm. I mean, after Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, the Oilers just aren't very good. They don't have that many goal scorers.
Yeah, Alex Chiasson, who was on a PTO, has got 16 goals.
Sure, throw in Chiasson.
Yeah.
Drake Caggiula, though, has 7 goals this year, and he had 13 last year. This is a guy that I've been watching since he played for the University of North Dakota, a very good player.
And who's Connor McDavid's best friend on the team? Drake Caggiula.
But why did you have to give up Caggiula to get Brandon Manning?
Why did you have to give up anything other than a 7th-round draft pick to take on the salary of Manning?
I just, I don't get it. When I saw that, I was like, why? Like, trade a draft pick, but Caggiula's a guy that has played in your top six.
I'd rather they acquire Peyton Manning than Brandon Manning.
And Alex Petrovic.
That'd be fun.
I mean, Alex Petrovic.
Can't be any worse.
I mean, sure, he's going to slot in there. And he's going to help your defense a little bit, but Petrovic is not a guy that is going to change your fortunes.
Alex Petrovic is a guy who the Florida Panthers at one time thought so highly of that they chose to protect him over Marchessault and over Riley Smith, as part of the expansion draft.
Crazy.
Petrovic had fallen out of favor in Florida, had been healthy scratched a number of times in Florida, had been healthy scratched 11 times in the last month and a half, and it's not like the Florida Panthers are a dominant defensive team last time I checked.
Well, and Petrovic is a guy that he's been in the league, I think, 6 years.
Yeah.
He's a big boy.
Yeah.
6'4", 220.
Didn't he fight Evander Kane like 3 times in one game? Isn't he the guy on the Florida Panthers? They fought like 3 times in one game.
I don't know if they've fought 3 times, Shawnee. Yeah. But I mean, he can drop the gloves.
Oh, yeah.
He's a physical guy.
Yeah.
But again, on a good team, he's a third pairing defenseman.
Yeah.
So if you ask him to play first pairing minutes or second pairing minutes, he's going to struggle. That's my point. The Oilers don't have the depth to replace the guys who have gotten injured. And that goes back to what Chiarelli did in the summer. And the only defenseman he acquired was Kevin Gravel. I mean, but it's true, though. I mean, the Oilers don't have a number one defenseman. I think Darnell Nurse is their best defenseman.
Well,
I really like Nurse's game.
There's no question that Darnell Nurse is there.
And Klefbom is their second best defenseman.
Right.
But when people talk about, you know, Adam Larson and Matt Benning, I mean, they're good defensemen. But as far as I'm concerned, they're not top pairing guys.
Could anybody, I mean, and maybe we'll talk to one of our guys in Edmonton on Saturday's
program. It's a very weak D-Corps. It might be the worst in the league.
It's a terrible defense. I mean, can anybody in Edmonton tell me with a straight face that they trust Peter Chiarelli to get them out of this malaise that they're in, to make the proper moves to get them the talent necessary on the back end and to play with Connor McDavid?
I'll tell you what they need, Shawnee. They need Alex Pietrangelo or Jake Muzzin, because if they don't get a bona fide top pairing guy,
what's that going to cost them?
Well,
I mean, Jesse.
You're not getting into the playoffs with that defense.
There's rumors that Jesse Puljujarvi's on the block, but anybody who's watched Jesse Puljujarvi play isn't paying you as much for him as his pedigree dictates.
If it takes Jesse Puljujarvi and a first round pick to get a top defenseman, I'm doing it.
Well, I mean, because Puljujarvi right now, you have no idea what you have. I mean, he hasn't shown enough to say that this is a long-term answer.
I agree with that.
On the team.
He's been a huge disappointment to date, but he's only 20 years old or 21 years old. So he could still turn into a good player. But I think at this point, I mean, what other cards, Drew, does Peter Chiarelli have left to play?
how can you let him play the cards?
Well, that's the thing.
That's the thing. I mean, how many
cards he's got left, how can you allow him to play them?
The card he has left, I mean, the player whose name is being bandied about there.
Don't say it. Don't say number 93.
No, I wasn't. I mean, because I don't think he would trade Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at this point. Puljujarvi is the guy that they would like to trade to acquire something back. But how can you say that you trust Chiarelli to make the right move there? How do you say that you trust Chiarelli
to trade
Puljujarvi and, make it for the right defenseman? He might trade it for a bag of beans. He might trade it for Connor McDavid's bully from elementary school. I mean,
how is Chiarelli still the GM? I mean, he has screwed things up there so badly. They can still make the playoffs, guys. I mean, they're, 4 points out of a playoff spot right now, or 5 points out of a playoff spot? So they still have a chance here, but
they have a chance because they play. I mean, they're actually down to – they're 5 points out behind Dallas. The Stars, who are winning right now, I believe, tonight, they're 4-all against the Devils right now. So the – they could be 6 points out of a playoff spot as of today.
They play the Coyotes next tomorrow. Mm.
And that'll be seven in a row? Seven losses potentially in a row? Or?
Yeah, they've lost six in a row, and they're at Arizona.
Pardon me, that's tonight.
That is tonight. That's later on tonight. You're right. That's six losses right now with a chance to lose their seventh game
in a row.
So it's
a must-win tonight. I mean, they have to win tonight. Their season doesn't ride on it, but, I mean, they have to stop the bleeding here. They need points desperately. You mentioned Dallas might win the game. They're at least going to get a point here. So, I mean, it's they're in trouble.
And they're down right now, 1-0.
They're down. It's Chris Curry. Arizona's winning 1-0. Oh, there you go. Producer Chris Curry telling us that the Coyotes are already up 1-0 on the Oilers. I mean, if they lose this game tonight, they might fire him tomorrow. I don't think they will, but
could they fire two coaches potentially in 1 year?
No.
You think Hitchcock's
there through the
And you
end
saw
of the
what
year.
Happened you hear about what happened in practice.
Well, you mentioned it earlier in the show, maybe expand on that.
Well, yeah, essentially, long story short, they were running an Oilers practice and they pulled Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, and Connor McDavid off, told them they were done, and the remainder of the team had to stay on and continue doing drills.
Well, I mean, I get why you're doing it, but the truth
of the
matter is...
That puts Connor McDavid in such a weird, awkward situation, though. I mean, if you want to leave... I mean, if you don't want to leave the ice, you want to stick with your teammates, but your coach
I'll tell you why I don't like that.
Oh, it's awful.
I'll tell you, it's not like the players that they made to keep practice are... I mean, Milan Lucic, I don't even know if he's underachieving anymore. That's just who he is.
It's not like
they have good players who are underachieving. They just have lousy players who are playing lousy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to expect lousy players to play great is unrealistic.
It's a poorly constructed team. They're top heavy. They don't have any secondary scoring. If Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl aren't putting the puck in the net, the Oilers have a lot of trouble scoring goals, Shawnee. The defense is not very good. I mean, Mikko Koskinen has been an upgrade for them in goal, but Cam Talbot has not had a great year.
Nope.
I think he's been better. Has he been better? I'd say he's been better than last year. But
he was terrible
last
year.
It's just a poorly constructed team.
And Koskinen's been slipping as of late.
And just think about if they had Taylor Hall in the lineup right now. I mean, it's just...
It's amazing. God bless the Oilers. They provide us with nothing other than comedy. That's it for NHL this week on this abbreviated program on Wednesday evening. Big thank you to John Mattis of thescore.com for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. And it's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at @IllegalCurve. Instagram, some great shots from the Jets Skills Competition, Instagram.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris Curry, for Sean Assor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and stay tuned for World Junior Hockey Championship quarterfinal action coming up next on your home for sports in Winnipeg, TSN Radio 1290.